Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Barbershop Group Podcast. This is Charles, your host for today. Glad to be back with you all. I hope that you guys have been enjoying some of our revamped material and some of the content that we're putting out there. We're trying to really, really become surgical with what we are discussing for you guys. So, yeah, just stick with us. Just stick with us. One of the things I want to mention to you guys as you're listening to this, don't forget to support the podcast on your app. If you're listening on your app, you can go to support, click the support button, and you can make a monthly donation, a contribution right there in the app. It's a great thing. And get a shout out from us, even be a guest co-host on the show with us. It's a great way to get some exposure. If you got a business out there, you're talking about some great things, we love to have you on. Okay. And we definitely enjoy giving shout outs to people who give us money. It's just the way the world works. That's where we are. I have today on the show, Dr. Steve Poulter. We're calling him Dr. Steve. Sometimes I just say, hey, doc, you know.
Yeah, I also have Paula Rodriguez
on the show. And, you know, Paula is like really one of my favorite sex therapists. Whenever I have a question about something, I can say, hey, you know, this is what we got going on. Can you take a look at this? And she'll say, give me a minute, shoot me back some information. And, you know, she's a great resource for individuals out there who've got all types of questions about sex. You know, she is based out of Miami, Florida. Paula, if I'm not mistaken, you're based out of Miami, Florida. Are you also registered in Massachusetts, is it?
So I was licensed in Boston, but now I'm just licensed here in Florida.
Okay, just in Florida.
Not going back to the cold. So
going back.
Gonna stay in the warm weather of South Florida.
I hear you.
We won't argue that point.
right. It's always better to be somewhere warm. So
yeah, good for you.
You know, one of the things that we want to talk about today, and as you guys know, Dr. Steve has written the book, The Shame Factor, Heal Your Deepest Fears and Set Yourself Free. We want to talk about shame, sex, and aging, all right? We're going to go there today. And we know that everybody loves to talk about sex, but not everybody loves to talk about aging, okay? So we're going to do it today. And I've got a story to tell you guys. You know, when I was about 16 years old, I played ball. You know, I was on the team and we had a coach that was a really interesting guy. He was a firebrand kind of coach. OK. And he was always yelling. He was intense. And I mean, he was really just into it. Right. And obviously, some of you guys know my age. So at the time when I'm playing ball, we don't have the long baggy basketball shorts. Yeah, we still got those short things. Okay,
so this is like all right, and 2000.
This is like 1990s. Yeah, this is late 80s, early 90s. This particular coach, he also wore the shorts too, and he had a habit of bending over in front of us, getting involved in the play, coaching everybody, pointing, you know, in this direction, in that direction. And if you were standing behind this coach, you got to see what we got to see. And we, you know, coined a name for him. We called him Mr. Big Nuts. Yeah, because his shorts were so small, you could see his nuts right there in his shorts. Okay, I'm not even joking.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's why they made big shorts after that, Charles.
That's probably why they came up with bigger shorts. We didn't know any better, man. When he started getting on our nerves and we had to do some extra suicide runs, you know, I don't know if they call them suicide runs anymore, but you guys know what we're talking about.
That's true. Know? I forgot about those.
I think they still do. Kids hate it.
They still, okay. Yeah. So they're grinding, you know, we're running these things and we're like, Chris, we're done, man. I'm not doing it anymore. Man, shut up talking to me, big nuts, you know? And that's kind of what we did, right? And okay, fast forward.
And you're alive to tell the story.
And I'm alive to tell the story, right?
Oh, man.
If my dad does listen to the podcast, by the way, he hears this, he's going to be like, you know what, man, wait till I see you again.
Yeah, I'm going to smack you into tomorrow.
You know, but he didn't like the coach either, so maybe I'll get away with it. But, you know, one of the things that the reason I tell that story is because let's fast forward now to middle age, right? We fast forward to middle age, doc, and my body, yep, my body is starting to change.
Yeah, so okay? He's talking to you.
Yeah, my body is starting to change. Mm-hmm. And I go sit down in my car one day and I'm like, whoa. All right. Well, what was that whoa for? Now, guys, I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but if you sat down without adjusting yourself and you're getting a little older, gravity's working on you, you sit on one of your nuts and you go, oh, my God. And I thought, why did I make fun of this man? This is what I get for making fun of this coach. OK, but the thing is, Doc, nobody told me that this was going to happen to me as a guy. OK. Right. Paula, nobody. Man, we don't talk about what happens to our bodies as we age, do we, Paula?
No.
Okay. But women do.
Women are good about that. Okay. I can't, Paula, following up on Charles's, one of my older clients go to the YMCA and they asked him not to change clothes at the YMCA anymore. This is like in the late 90s. Mm. He's in his late 70s, early. The member said he scared the younger men in the locker room because of scare. Because his testicles were like down to his knees, not literally, but I remember hearing this. And he was a retired psychologist. He was really like, guys, this is what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Loss of muscle mass. So
right. And so guess what? He kept going to the Y and he wasn't good. He goes, guys, embrace it. He says, that's why they invented stretch jeans for men.
Mm.
I swear to God, you guys, I'm not all joking aside, Paula. That's why. But
I think it's important, you guys. Like, you know, these gradual changes, they don't happen all at once. So, but I think, you know, it is more natural, I think, for women to talk among themselves, right? And so there are changes that we go through too, but I think it is interesting. There's something about, you know, sex and aging, right? Like people often assume that I work with older couples. No, you know, the people that aren't having sex or have loss of desire are mid-30s. You know, maybe 40s, it depends on how long they've been in the relationship, but it's not my older couples that come in. But people say, really? You know, when you talk about aging and sex, like, ew, you know, there's something about that. It's like, this is going to happen. It's going to happen to all of us, you know, so embracing it and self-acceptance is a must.
Paul, I want to ask you a question. Charles, to follow up on yours, I think for men, I'm older than Charles, but I think because it's more visual for women, they're aging, or men, because it's not visual, we don't talk about it, so therefore it's not happening. Would you agree with that idea?
I think yes, and I think imagine, Steve, like I think the message for men has been, right, that talking about feelings, at least in some cultures, is a threat to your masculinity. Right. So already we're drawn to maybe not talk about many things.
In denial.
We're drawn to avoid or deny. So I think it actually works against us.
Spot on. Charles?
Yeah. There you go.
Spot on. That's there it. We go. So,
you know, guys, we have a lot of questions.
Yeah, let's go.
We have a lot of questions.
Charles, you kick it off.
They've been submitted. And, you know, I'm going to go through these questions. Some of them are interesting, to say the least. But they are questions that came from guys, things that some guys may have been afraid to ask openly, things that they've been dealing with, struggling with, and didn't necessarily know where to go. You know, one of the things that I know a lot of guys deal with is thinning hair, Paula. And, you know, one of the questions that came up is, well, all right, my hair is thinning. Does it mean my testosterone is going down? And if my testosterone is going down, is that going to impact my libido? What do you say about that?
Yes. I think testosterone, you know, over time does start to go down. It does impact your libido along with muscle mass, along with hair loss. But I think, you guys, it's really important because I think a lot of the questions were aimed towards, you know, what do I do? It's really important to understand that no illness or no disability and even aging, it doesn't really disrupt desire. And we can talk about that more.
Right on. Desire doesn't go down with age. performance does, right?
Exactly. And thinking about loss of libido, you know, yes, there's physiological changes that happen for men and for women. But when we think a little bit about kind of like that idea of desire and the invitation and this anticipation, I think that's what's really important. Being able to understand that we can no longer define sex with intercourse, right? We have to expand the definition of sex. And also the loss of the libido, it can be physiological, but there's such a big psychological component. And that's really what I focus on, right? Going back to this idea of the dual control response model, which is, you know, was created by Masters and Johnson's. Emily Nagoski, who's amazing, talks a lot about this. We all have brakes and we all have the accelerators. The brakes is anything in my environment that inhibits sexual arousal. The accelerator is anything in my environment that stimulates, right? So you're aging, things are changing, you know, that's going to press a little bit on the brakes.
You're pumping the brakes. Right.
Yes. Often we think, oh my God, we need more on the accelerator. We need more lingerie, more toys, more sex. We're managing the wrong issue. It's about understanding what is it like that I'm aging? What is it like that I'm losing my hair? Right. But again, these changes are gradual. So it gives you an opportunity to kind of embrace them and talk about them as you go. But yes, loss of libido because testosterone does diminish. If, you know, I believe that 35 to 70% of men over the age of 70 will experience testosterone below 200. And this can cause a lot of different things. You know, sometimes depression, sometimes decreases in libido, but it's important to just be proactive, you know, visit your doctor, make sure that you're talking about these things with someone, especially with a professional that can help.
Well, can I just jump in on there? I have a lot of men in my practice that take, that get testosterone pellets in their hip once a month. And I mean, when I say, and I'm talking the whole economic guys that are just barely making it to, you know, wealth, no problem. It's a game changer for them. They
but what happens, right? Because that's interesting. Because we know that as women age, right, the walls of the vagina thin, sex can be painful because lubrication is not the same. Even with lubricants, it can be painful, right? Women can also experience hot flashes, headaches, changes
right.
in moods.
Menopause.
So the guy gets testosterone, he's ready, menopause. Right. And then what happens if she's not there? Right. So we have to be mindful because I think the same thing with the Viagra, right? 50% of prescriptions are not refilled. People take the Viagra and they show up with a freaking nice hard erection and the woman is not even there yet. It takes women at least 15 to 20 minutes to get to the gate of, do I want to go further? Right? Do I want to go more? So I think it is really important to understand how your partner also works. But that's a great point, Steve.
Okay, Charles, we're going to go. Most of my guys who get testosterone implants, I call them, because their partner's like, would you get a sex drive again? Would you get in the game with me? I'm peaking and you're decreasing. This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Do I need to go get the lifeguard? I mean, that's literally stuff I hear. I'm like, no, don't get the lifeguard.
Okay, that's good. Interesting. That's good.
Yeah. Get the lifeguard. Get yourself going. Charles? Yeah.
So, you know, one of the other things that a lot of men have concerns about that they don't really talk about openly is aging and losing penis size, right? You know, so is there, we know that sometimes there's a physiological component to penis size and loss, but you know, is there a mental component to it? So guys are just like, wait, you know, what's happening now? Is it in my head? Is it in my body? Am I going to shrink? What is this going to be like for my partner? How do I even talk about this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not possible that your penis is going to shrink just because. But what does happen, because their fat distribution becomes a little bit different, there is more fat stored in the pubic bone, then that's going to stretch out and it is going to feel like you've gotten smaller. This is from Dr. Stainer. He's a urologist in the Institute of Men's Health in Jersey. He says, you know, that every 30 pounds, you add an effective half an inch in length. When you have that beer belly, right, what happens is that the fat pad kind of pushes out a larger penile percentage. So it's not possible, but this is the thing, you know, because even with aging, not aging, 70% of men worry about penis size. So this is the thing. We have a porn accessible culture where we're constantly comparing to what we see on TV, right? So people become obsessed. They're like, hola, this morning I woke up and I measured myself. And then every day this becomes their thing that they cannot think about anything else. So it is impossible. If it was possible for us to make the penis larger, the three of us would be billionaires right now. And I'm not in the middle of man.
Okay? You know, I'd be down in South Florida. That's where I'd be.
Champagne and good whiskey.
To your point about the penis size getting bigger, my one of my colleagues says, if your neck gets bigger when you gain weight, so will your penis. I went, what? At UCLA, the obesity, I mean, the eating disorder clinic, men, you know, they go from an 18-inch neck down to a 15. And all of a sudden, they're worried about their genitalia. And the doctor's like, well, your neck got smaller. So, of course, your penis got smaller.
Wow.
It has to do with fat. Like you said, Paula, right on. Men don't want
to
hear that.
And Charles, and I think to your point, you know, again, going to a little bit of the psychological, when it becomes kind of like you're, you know, and guys, yes, penises are important. But let's think about desire, right? Everybody here has watched girl-on-girl porn. They don't have a penis and they look like they're having a blast, right? So focus, I mean, desire and the body and so many different things, but people get obsessed and it becomes like, how do I make this better? What is the solution? We're looking on research. So that's when the psychological component can really show up.
Paula, I got into hypnosis, guided meditation from a urologist. He said 90% of his clients, it wasn't organic. That's Charles. I do more guided imagery for men in sexual intimacy. Yes.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's it.
You can't have good sex without having mindful sex.
Right.
So,
and that's
so, yeah, yeah.
And starts in the kitchen, Charles.
I'm sorry. There we go. Starts in the kitchen. But I just want to go back. I just want to go back to maybe some guys who are watching porn need to watch girl on girl porn a little more so they can
desire,
learn something.
Right?
It's about desire. I don't know. I mean, if you got to watch it, hey.
You know, Paula, I cannot tell you. After this today, I've got a three gentlemen come in, all retired, and they worry and they take Viagra. I go, that doesn't help your desire.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
I love that you're doing that work out there.
Oh my god, I do hypnosis for once they relax, they feel like they're 25 again in a great way. Because as you know, Paul and Charles, you cannot be in fight or flight and be aroused.
Right.
Incompatible.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's right. That's
incompatible.
Right. Yeah.
I'll be quiet. Guys, keep going.
one of the other things that we know a lot of men deal with, and this is one of those, again, shameful parts of life that guys just don't talk about. And we understand why. You know, sometimes guys may not like the way their penis looks. Okay. So a question arose, well, you know, I have a curved penis and I'm considering getting cosmetic surgery for it because I feel awkward, right? And my guy friends, I've talked to them before about it. They laugh it off. Is this something healthy for me to do? Like, how do I know when, you know, it's not abnormal when, you know, it's just hard for men to talk about these things. So, Paula, have you ever encountered that at all?
No, I encounter more penis size. But again, you guys, this can happen with age because scar tissue accumulates, right? Yeah. Sports, the shaft bends when you're having sex. So all of these things can happen. But I think, you know, yes, there are injections, there are surgical procedures, but, you know, but I think again, you know, how important are you? How important are the cosmetics to you? And how do you carry that sense of self? You know, how do we deal with the insecurities right? Because a lot of the times when my guys come in and they're worried about penis size, there's nothing that we can do to change that. Again, we get so fixated on that solution. If it's something, you know, and I wonder, kind of thinking a little bit about, okay, if I get the surgical procedure, you know, what is my expectation? How is my sex life going to be better? Am I finally going to feel like all of these negative thoughts are gone? Most of the time, some of them may, but some of them may not, right? And so I think talk to your urologist, because there's surgical procedures, but there's also injections to help that scar tissue that's been accumulated. I would say less invasive, better. So talking to your urologist is a good idea.
I want to jump in with you. Do you deal with a lot of guys with penile implants?
I don't.
In the last 5 years, Charles, I didn't even mention this to you. They call them robo dicks. In the scrotum, you get this pump, and on the sides of the shaft, a fluid goes up, and they have immediate erection. I've had more guys on the side. It's wild out here in the West.
What do you find the quality of their sex life is? Because yes, you know, that can definitely be done, but what do you think about the quality of their sex life? What do you find with this?
It's interesting, Paula and Charles. I find that the guys feel better because their calling card is what Charles, all these questions. And you're saying, if I can have an erection and be sexual, then I'm a man. I'm like, oh, you guys are on the wrong page. You're on the wrong page. That's what it's wrong. Wrong's not the right word. We're going the wrong direction. Let's say that. We're going the wrong direction.
Love that. We're going the wrong direction. Because I think that, you know, we define men. The more sex that you can have, the more manly you are.
We're going the wrong way.
I think, yep. Exactly. So I think the wrong direction, that's a great way to frame it.
So, Charles, I got a guy right now. Since 2015, this is my seventh client who's done it. Not my prompting. And there's urologists out here, UCLA, USC, that do this.
Yeah.
And it's not because of prostate cancer either.
Mm-hmm. So here's something that I think about when I hear you give the numbers regarding that is I go back to something that Paula said before, and it's okay. So, you know, you've got this implant, you feel manly, right? You can get this erection on call, but what does that mean for your partner? Right? Like how does that translate into something good? Does it always translate into something good for your partner? The fact that you had this, you know, this insecurity, this issue with your body, this image issue, it doesn't mean that she, in most cases, and in some cases he, is going to be fulfilled because of what you did. You see? So to me, it just masks something else that's going on once again, right? Because let's face
right
it.
Right on, Charles.
So here's another thing that comes to mind. All right, so I went out and I got this implant, right? And my current partner, now, you know, I'm Robo Man, and
right,
she doesn't want it the way I want it, and I want to be satisfied. So what's probably going to end up happening? You know, Paula knows it. I'm finding somebody else. Right? Here you go. Right? I'm finding somebody. Like, how many people do I have to find that'll take my robo dick? It doesn't work that way.
Only 25% of women can have an orgasm through penetration. 1 out of 4. Right? I think that the clitoris is the light in the lighthouse. Always go back to it. Right?
This is right. Paula, you've changed my life, okay? Paula, right. Oh my God. I'll never look at a lighthouse the same way again.
So, but you know what though, Doc? But it's funny what she says, she says leads us into the fourth question.
Yes,
and
it does.
Now it's a little different because, you know, some guys are saying, hey, well, you know, as I've aged and as I've, you know, as you know, my performance has changed with regard to my penis, right? I found myself engaging more in foreplay or wanting to. And now my partner is kind of like, you know, she's got some body image issues and some concerns, and I want to delve into foreplay more, and she doesn't. So, Paula, how can a man who now has changed his focus and is enjoying something different, how can he get his partner on board with that?
Oh, you guys, so this is such a big topic and so many thoughts come to mind, but I think, yes. Foreplay is foreplay, right? We can't live without it. But I think, you mentioned, Charles, body issues, right? Mm. We have this idea of spectatoring, right? If I'm having sex, but then I'm looking at my belly, how does it look? Right. It's going to be what Stevie was saying. It's going to be really, really hard to be in the moment. So I think, you know, because one of the questions, Charles, is, you know, says something, how can I get her to?
Yes.
Let's reframe that. What can I do to invite? And I watched one of you guys just talk and I loved it because I think, Charles, you said something, disconnect or reconnect. And then Steve, you talked about how it starts in the kitchen. Foreplay, right? It's intellectual, it's emotional, but it's really important. Guys, you got to practice your communication skills. Approach is everything. We love vulnerability, right? Because you show this part of you that we don't see really often. So think a little bit about how are you having those conversations? How are you inviting, right? What does that look like? Because it may be that she feels really comfortable with her body because her too has gone through some really challenging changes.
Paul, I cannot, it's interesting. I read that question, Charles. In my practice, and I've got a lot of dudes, it's the other way around. The woman wants to do foreplay and my buddy, my client just wants to do a bump and run. And I'm not trying to be facetious.
Right.
I find that women crave, if he wants to do foreplay, she'll be there all week. Mm. Foreplay. Yeah. And I love this saying, good sex is emotional. It's connection. It's a connection. And that's why Charles, we've talked about, it's in the kitchen. And you're right about women. They love when a guy is open in vulnerability.
Yeah, that's a big thing right there, right?
We love the buildup. We love the anticipation. We love the buildup because some of my guys are like, well, I took her to dinner. And then when we got home, nothing happened, right? It can't be this reciprocal thing that I take you to dinner, therefore I expect you to, right? You know, it's the buildup. It's the cultivating this idea of intimacy over a long period of time. I love this definition of intimacy, you guys. Is the perfect balance between vulnerability and safety. I have to feel safe to say no in order for me to be able to say yes.
That's why breakup sex sometimes is so powerful because they're both vulnerable for a few minutes. And I say you don't need to break up to feel vulnerable.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Don't go out there and break up with your girl tomorrow.
Well, I could not agree with you more. Charles, I'll just go on the record. If I meet up 10 guys that have impotency issues, 9 of them have safety issues.
Oh, wow. Wow. So 9
of them have safety issues. 9 out of 10.
Wow.
And when I say safety, I'm talking about emotional. It could be a trauma. A mom died at age 10. Or safety, 90% of the time with intimacy, feeling impotent. For men.
Wow.
Yeah, that's and something. Women, and I don't think there's a woman alive who would disagree with that.
Yeah.
When they feel safe, they're in.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that like now what you guys are saying that, a lot of guys don't check in with themselves on this. When guys feel emotionally safe, it changes for us too. So it's really good for men to know that because a lot of men just think they may consider it for women, but they don't consider what emotional safety means for them in their sex lives. Right. Yeah.
Charles,
we don't do that.
So that is, if there's one thing in this podcast, that might be one of the top 5 points. They don't check in.
Right.
They're disconnected from their body and their emotional body too.
Right. Right. That's interesting. So let's go on with the next one. And this gets a little dicey, but one of the questions that came about was when I was younger, I was extremely jealous, right? The guy says he hated people looking at his partner, but now that he's aged and things are changing, he finds that he's actually turned on and attracted by the idea of someone else sleeping with his partner, having sex with his partner. Paula, this is completely out of my wheelhouse. Talk to me about this right now. What's going on?
Okay, guys, listen, if there is a name for it, we can normalize it and you're not alone. This is called cuckolding.
Okay. Right? Okay. And it is
a fantasy. Say that again, Paula. I need to hear that again out here.
So if there's a name out there for it, we can normalize it. This is called cuckolding. And the definition is that there's a sexual interest where someone is turned on or they derive arousal from watching their partner have sex with someone else. There's a couple of reasons. So you guys, Justin Leemer, he does a lot of research on fantasies. And one of the things that he talks about, or he calls it eroticized cheating. It's a way to play out a fear of infidelity through a consensual channel, if that makes sense. Through the, Dan Savage calls it a fear turned into a sexual fetish, right? So the word that's coming to me is shame. I want to say, don't feel shameful. There's a name for it. There's a fantasy that goes along with it. And a lot of kinks, you guys, and a lot of BDSM. A lot of people, you know, one of the fantasies for women, one of the top ones is rape fantasies. Doesn't mean that they want to be raped, but there's something about that. Sometimes people can play out some of their trauma, some of their fears through sexual fantasies. The other explanation is that they may get off watching their partner have sex with someone else because of the arousal, because of the desire, because of the orgasm, the satisfaction, and they can identify with that person if they look a certain way, if they're doing something to their wife. So there's a couple of reasons, but those would be the main ones. But if there's a name for it out there, you're not alone and we can normalize it. That's what I want to say to that person.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so Paula, Charles, can I throw in 2 cents here?
Yes, absolutely.
What you just said about consensual naughty. That's, I got guys, consensual naughty.
So I'm gonna write that one down.
Right? Consensual naughty. And I told Charles last week to have you ask your partner, what do they fantasize about when they masturbate? Because that becomes the royal road to what feels naughty. Between the two of you, in a great way. It's not dehumanizing.
Yes, and knowing. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, Steve.
No,
we have so much. We can have like a 3-hour conversation. and understanding that, you know, some fantasies, right, can be private. You know, you don't have to share all your fantasies. Some fantasies can be shared, right? And also, you guys, I forgot to mention this, that with fantasies, we want to be mindful that for some people, fantasies are a must. Like, I need to be in a scene where I'm cuckolding because that's the only way that I get off. It's not usual. It can be preferred, right? Special occasions, or it can be part of the repertoire, right? Yes. But yes, that's a really, you know, sharing your fantasies with your partner and having your partner make the space for you to listen, right? Because sometimes the partner may hear something that they don't agree with. Why do you like that? That's weird. Are you being pervy? That's a creep. You know, I work with a lot of couples on that, you know, really understanding what is it about that scene that turns you on? Doesn't necessarily mean it needs to happen in this relationship.
And you know, Paul, to your point in couples therapy, I have a lot of couples in the last year, more than I've ever had. When the other partner judges the vulnerability, game's over.
Over.
Game's over. Done. Yep. There is not enough Viagra. I had one guy, he thought he was going to have a stroke because he couldn't overcome his shame. Yeah. He shared, it wasn't weird, it was like two women. It was just what, you know, I called very vanilla. But his wife, well, what do you like, my sister? He's like, I didn't talk about your sister. It's like, that's where it went. And I can tell you something, I mean, they didn't have sex for months after that one.
Yeah.
Go ahead, very, Charles.
I'm very thank sure you about that.
Oh, man.
Very sure. So one of the things that came to mind, you know, and some of these questions again are steeped in shame, right? Paula, one individual says that his former partner had an issue with his high libido and asked him to see a doctor to have, was there some type of supplement or some type of a medication or something that he could take to reduce his libido? What's going on with that? I mean, I would just hate to be that guy and have that received that way.
Yeah, you know, that's good. But you know, I've had that.
You've had that happen.
But that has shown up in my practice. So one, differences in libido, completely natural. Of course we're going to have differences in libido because as we know, libido is affected by many different things. To this guy, I would ask, you know, I'm wondering, like, when you say higher libido, like, are we talking, like, on a daily basis? You know, what does this look like? Because we just want to be mindful. Are we using sex as a way to de-stress? If no, that's okay, but I want you to think about that. Two, is there a little bit of a sexual compulsivity issue? Is a way that I just unwind? Is something that I need in order to be able to feel okay, right?
So, self-soothing.
Self-soothing, exactly. And then people that have anxious attachment, right, use sex as a way to cope with uncertainty in the relationship. So if those are not it, then thinking a little bit about what are the differences in libido? And again, sexual communication. Tell me how you talk and I'll tell you how you sex, right? Mm. So one, normalizing that those differences are completely okay. But thinking a little bit about how do I invite my partner? Because it is, you know, then again, shame is coming up. Go get the dog, go get yourself checked because there's something wrong with you.
Yes.
Right. And I don't think that's okay. We need to normalize that this is okay. Right. But really trying to find a middle ground. And then for that person that says, I really have a high libido, what does I look like? I would wonder. And is that, you know, does that equate to anything else that may be coming up?
Paul and Charles, to your point, when I get couples, you know, he wants to do it every day. I want to do it once a week. I try to separate out impulse from desire.
Yes. Who the hell can? Who has time to have sex every day first?
Nobody. Yeah. Unless, yeah. And if you do, you might. Let's just be honest. Paul, desire.
Impulse, I would say.
Impulse. Because another thing is, I heard this theorist once say that understand what feels sexual to you in your relationship and what feels sexual to your partner. You two talk about that. There tends to be no problems or minimizes the problem.
And talk about it outside the relationship, right? You don't want, I mean, outside the act, right? You don't want to be in the middle of a sexual encounter and all of a sudden I'm telling you, I don't like this and I don't like that. And how does it feel? And this is the thing. And I'm going to focus on women just for the context of the conversation. You know, for women, we are taught to be the ones to fix the relationship. We're caretakers by nature. So one of the common things that I see is that women don't tell the guys what they don't like, what they like. And then the guys get really, you know, eventually kind of feel like this despair because they're like, oh my God, I hurt you. And I didn't know I was hurting you. Right. So being able to self-soothe, right? Tell yourself that this is about revealing your truth, letting your partner know what you like and what you dislike in bed, because that can create deep-rooted resentments. And that shows up so much in the work that I do with couples.
Yeah.
Paul, spot on. Charles?
Yeah.
That cover, so, right? Spot on.
One of the other things that a lot of guys think about when it comes to aging and that they actually experience is, you know, as we age, sometimes it takes us longer to have an orgasm, right? And Dr. Poulter and I, we were talking about it on a previous show, that it's not always about the end zone. But for a lot of guys who are focusing on the end zone, focusing on the orgasm, they're saying, hey, you know what? I used to be able to just go and then, here we are. And now as I'm aging, it's taking me a little longer to have an orgasm. You know, is that normal? Is there something wrong with me? What's going on, Paula?
And I love what you said, Charles, focusing on the end zone. How about we focus on the zone and we'll see if we get to the end, right? So one of the things, but I want to normalize, you guys, 8 to 15% of men over the 50 years of age present, they call it delayed ejaculation, but now the name is ejaculatory inhibition. And it's the most prevalent problem in older men. So yes, it is going to take you a little bit longer to ejaculate. But here we go, right? Because now we can easily create a psychological component. If you start to feel, why am I not coming? Why am I not coming? I'm going hard. Yeah. Why am I not? What's happening? If you say, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, the last thing that's going to happen is that you're going to go to sleep, right?
Yeah. Right, so right.
Being able to understand, right? And not being shy, because this is the other thing that shows up in ejaculatory inhibition, that men don't feel comfortable asking for more subjective stimulation or arousal. You are going to need a little bit of extra stimulation. You are going to need other ways to get up, mm-hmm. and make sure that you also cultivate or feed your own sexuality. Masturbate without porn. Put some blindfolds on. Let your sensations take you there. But mm-hmm. the worst thing that can happen is that, you know, focusing on the end zone. Again, stay in the zone and see how you can get to the end. Because some of my guys, my younger guys, it's more psychological than physiological. But as we age, we have to be mindful that this is going to show up.
Paula, to your point, I find when my guys relax, they never leave the zone in a great way. When they're relaxed, they're not worried about the end zone because they're in it and they'll get there. And there's not this urgency, psychological urgency, because if I don't finish, then my partner thinks something's wrong. No, you're relaxed. You're connected.
Yeah, see, and the reality is that sometimes, you know, we may take that personal. So that's why it's so important to educate. When you can normalize something and say, oh, this happens, 90% of men lose their erection before the age of 40 because of 10,000 million reasons. Not because you're not attracted to your partner, not because, right. you know, so normalizing, because that's great. But you also need to have a partner that can say, ah, okay, this is part of the whole, okay. And we can both, when two people are in this together and normalize all these experiences, when age hits, it doesn't impact you as much because you've been talking about it, you've been creative. I think of sexuality as seasons on a Netflix series. Right? The seasons when we were really young. This is the season where maybe you know you have a sex ignite the desire. Then this is the season where maybe you guys try something a little bit different. We have to evolve as sexuality evolves. Redefine it. Don't focus so much on outcome and playing with this idea of desire. Super important.
Okay, yeah. Paula, Charles, I gotta ask a quick question. Paul, I get more men come in. When I say, Charles, more men, I'm talking from age 25 to 85 with shame that they lost their erection. It's as if they are bankrupt.
I know. This comes to my practice all the time.
Okay, thank you.
Because I have some flows, you guys. Right. And I wanted to share you guys, this is Barry McCarthy. He has created the Good Enough Sex Model. He talks a lot about sex and aging. And he talked a little bit about that when older couples stop having sex, almost always is the man's decision.
Yes.
Because they fall into this behavioral cycle of anticipatory anxiety, performance-oriented intercourse, embarrassment, and ultimately sexual avoidance. He says to himself, why start something that I cannot finish?
Right on.
Right? Okay. So loss of erection, again, you guys normalize it, you know, but when, if you lose your erection, you're like, oh my God, this is bad. What's wrong with me? I mean, guys, this is crazy to me. In their 30s taking Viagra. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, Paula, thank you. And Charles, we didn't even get into this. When we spoke about it, that's 50% of my sexual talks with men. That topic right there.
Yeah.
Guys, you can't be on every day.
And Paula, you said that you're having 30-year-olds taking Viagra now.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Or people that have come in, because remember, guys, it takes, on average, it takes 6 years for a man to actually come in to work on the psychology of sex. 6 years. They have tried pills, they have tried,
love it.
They have tried sprays, they have tried escorts, sex workers, you name it, right? And so by the time they come here, and I think that's my biggest challenge, you know, when people are like, okay, but we go through a whole session of beautiful insight, and at the end, okay, but how do I fix it? I'm like, oh, God, big words.
Come here, let me say. Yeah. Paula, Joe, you know, it's interesting. Couples, they say couples who have marital problems wait 7 years.
Which is imagine you guys, and I know we're kind of, but
when it's all related. You earlier, yes, it's all related.
The relationship, yeah. And a lot of couples experience, right? Because we grew up with these movies that orgasms are easy. We have a porn accessible culture. So when sex starts to diminish, right, we don't know what to do with it. That idea of sexual avoidance, by the time people come in, if we don't treat the lack of sex within the first 5 years of a long-term relationship, it becomes the number one reason for divorce. So
hands down, because you lose that communication.
And they're like, it's therapy or else. I am very transparent with them. I'm like, this is like you coming into the emergency room, me trying to bring you back to life and hoping that you survive, right? Because then I am very transparent when people come in. You know, if you're coming in and you're like, listen, we've noticed this little thing and we just want to, we're in a place when we want to evolve and grow. I love working with those couples because prognosis increases by a lot. Yeah. You know, of a positive outcome than when people come in when they're holding to a little thin threat.
Paula, Charles, forgive me for this question. Paula, I, as a rookie therapist, a couple comes in, they've been married 27 years. I go, when's the last time you guys had sex? Neither one could remember. And now that to me, it's over. The lawn has died. It's over. Sorry, Charles, the lawn's dead. What's that?
I don't know if you're familiar with Sensate Focus. I actually use it a lot in my practice. You know, Linda Wiener does a really good job. She has really good books on sex therapy and Sensate Focus. So that's how I try to ignite, you know, but I always tell people, listen, we need to talk and go through the trenches of why have we avoided this for so long before we can do anything physical. And Charles, it's just a way to, because in our culture, we're taught to touch for pleasure. So Sensei kind of like switches it a little bit. First of all, you touch for your own interest. And I'm giving you guys the super clip notes, but you stay away from genitals in the first Sensei. So you're not even allowed to go there. So it's really a way to be curious and let your fingertips go wherever you're curious. And people come in and sometimes they're like, oh my God, we failed and we had sex because the intercourse is not allowed. And it's really interesting when you take that away, what it does to the couple. Or some people come in and say, holy crap, I noticed this part of my partner's body that I had never noticed before. And then the partner says, yeah, and it felt really good when you were touching their temperature, texture, and measure. So it's a way to just, you know, be curious in a different type of way. And that's, I use that a lot in my practice. But yeah, it's not uncommon that people say we have had sex once or twice a year in the last 10 years. So that's okay.
Paula, what has been your professional experience with those couples? Are they open to it? Well, they're seeing you, so they are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a clinician, you got to get them to buy in. What I mean by that, you know, really, that we're here for the right reasons, that we're educating. You know, when you have a couple trust you, because therapy sometimes is an investment, but when they have them trust you, right, and as a clinician, I have to be so mindful, because sometimes when people are anxious, you can pick up right on the anxiety all day. We're absorbing other people's energy. So I have to slow myself down because people want solutions. Like those people that the first three sessions, we do so much work. I'm like throwing gems and they're like, okay, but how do we fix it? I'm like, oh my God, shoot me. I'm like,
I think
they are open to it. And I remind them, I always say, listen, this is how we're working. We're going to do this first. Eventually, we're going to get here. But I need to slow down. I am very honest with how it works because people want to know how many sessions. It's really hard to talk to them.
You know something? Paula, Charles, this is so helpful. Couples who've stopped having sex, it's not fatal. It's not fatal. If they want it to be fatal, it is. Like you said,
and we have to be mindful that sometimes the lack of sex it's an indicator of other issues in the relationship. We cannot fix the sex if we cannot talk about communication, intimacy, trauma, right? Past resentments, which resentments are rooted in pain, but expressed in anger or distance. So it is really important to understand the whole, I would be doing people a disservice. You know, there are people that I've heard clinicians that are like, well, go have sex. You know, that is the worst thing that you can do because they're going to fail. And it's just going to be one more failure. Yes. One more thing that didn't work, and then we're going to despair.
Paula, and Charles, this is related to one of the questions. I find that couples have stopped having sex over the years. Many times it's because there was an affair. And they never worked it out, never spoke about it. And now we got the Grand Canyon.
Right.
8 miles apart.
Right.
You guys, and I believe that an affair, to really overcome an affair, this is my professional opinion.
Please.
You cannot do it without a third person.
Absolutely.
Meaning a therapist, not another affair. Meaning a therapist.
No, exactly. Oh, good God. Yeah, here we go. Paula.
I'm gonna cheat too because you cheated. I'm like, no, this is not the way.
No. Time out. We're going.
You have, there's so many layers. Because I think as men, and this is aging men, all men, you know, they tend to do this behavioral thing, right? Which the woman says, you know, you never come home on time. Okay, honey, I'm going to come home on time. They do it for 2 weeks, maybe one, maybe three if we're lucky. And then they regress to old behavior. You need to know, you have to find an interest to make the effort within you of why you want to come home early. But we've been fed this idea, happy wife, happy life. No, that is wrong. Right. So I think that behavioral approach of let me say yes, because I don't want to do conflict because conflict feels really uncomfortable. And then we go back into old habits. So it's important when you're signing in to make a change, you got to understand, you got to be motivated. You got to motivate yourself. The way that I do couples work, I work on individual issues within the context of our relationship, because it is a lot easier to change yourself than to see, well, he did this and she did that. And they did this. You know, you got to work on yourself. If you make those individual changes, both of you will move.
Paul, I many times do couple therapies now individually with a couple. I see them individually. And we have an agreement.
Yeah, some therapists are opposed to that. I am not, right? Yeah. It depends on the couple.
On the couple, right. But there's no secrets. Everything's open. Boy, we get there a lot quicker.
Yeah. Interesting. That's interesting. Well, you know, guys, we are running short on time, but before we go, Paula, I have a question or three questions for you, based on the listeners, if I can put these out there for you. And if you're able to answer them, great. And if not, we may have to come back and do it again later. But just for aging men in sex, Paula, can you name three mistakes that men make regarding aging and sexuality? Just three things.
Okay, three things. So let me see. So I think one, I hear a lot of my men, you know, sometimes they tend to say, well, she's not stimulating me enough, right? Because I think as men, men learn, I have to pleasure her and women have to stimulate me. So stimulate yourself. Don't forget, you know, desire. You got to desire yourself first in order to feel desired by the other. So don't stop feeding and cultivating self-sexuality. The second one, I would say, you know, don't compare your erections to the way that they were in your 20s. Right? Because people are like, oh my God, but in my 20s and I used to and before. Remember, this is a new season. So don't get so focused on what it was. Accept on what is and see where we can go from there. And then I would say the third one, you know, the solution-focused approach. Men tend to be solution-focused, right? Women, you know, complain about this a lot. Hey, I had a day at work. Maybe you should quit. But I don't want to quit. I just want to tell you I had a hard day at work. So, you know, when we focus on the solutions, my penis and why is this happening? We're missing so much more beautiful ways to connect to your partner. Yes. And women's desire is all about the invitation, all about the anticipation, all about the sensations. So let your sensations guide your pleasure. I would say those are my things.
Those are the three things. Hey guys, fantastic. You all have heard it. Listening today, you all have been listening to Dr. Steve Poulter, the author of The Shame Factor, Heal Your Deepest Fears and Set Yourself Free. You all are able to purchase his book by clicking on the link in the show notes. It's a great tool to have. I keep one on me. It's with me everywhere I go. Oh, it's pretty thick, Charles. And it makes a lot of sense to have this book. If you have been exposed to any type of traumatic event in your life, painful things that have happened to you or that you've seen happen to others, if you're dealing with family issues, get this book, okay? It's worth every penny, right? We've also been talking to Paula Rodriguez, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a sex therapist in Miami, Florida. And she's doing a lot of work in the area of Miami, but she's also going beyond that, you know, in the state of Florida. And she just offers a lot of educational resources for people who are interested in sex. And I got to tell you guys, I'm a little bit biased when it comes to Paula. Okay. I enjoy her work because though she's a sex therapist, she's not throwing a vibrator up in my face every time she posts something on Instagram. Okay. Nothing against sex toys, guys. Okay.
No judgment.
However, you know, Paula meets you where you are, and she doesn't come with an agenda to get you to understand sex the way she wants you to understand sex. She doesn't come to you with, you know, anything that's kind of backdoor and stuff like that. And if you guys have been looking at sex therapy, some of you all will understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
And it's really important when you seek out someone for help that it's someone who is open to what you have going on. They're non-judgmental, but they don't have a specific agenda. They're working within the frames of your comfortability and in helping you get to somewhere else that you want to go, right? And that's really important when you're talking to a lot of people who have dealt with so much sexual shame in their lives, right? You don't know what the response could be if she just put this 10-inch, you know, black dildo up in your face. You're like, well, what the heck? That's not what we're talking about right now. And we know that there are a lot of men out there have issues with their women using vibrators. And Paula can help you work through some of those types of things, right? Yes. She doesn't do it in an invasive way. She doesn't do it in an emasculating way or threatening way, but she really, really meets you where you are and helps you deal with some of the things that you've got going on. And that's one of the reasons why I call on her so much. So Paula, thank you for making some time to speak to us today.
Paula, okay? Thank you.
Charles, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And Steve, so nice to meet you.
Oh, Paula, thank you. And I just want to say this, Charles, I'm with you all day. What you just said about Paula, it's a pleasure to meet you. And you do Zoom sessions because you could talk to other people around the country, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Because I guarantee you, I will have people calling you because, as Charles just said, you're very approachable.
Yeah.
And men, cool. Thank you, guys. You're
serious. I can't say that enough. When men feel like someone's approachable, they'll tell you the whole story. And thank you for what you're doing. And Charles, thank you for putting this together.
Thank you, guys.
You're
it's
the
a
best,
pleasure.
Brother.
And you know, yes, Charles, I love your little podcast. And whenever you have me back, anytime.
I love it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Paula.
Well, guys, you know, it's been great to talk to you both. And for you listeners out there, look, we know that the weekend is approaching. We are still addressing the pandemic. We got to be safe, guys. If you are into the vaccine, get your vaccine. If not, do some other things to keep yourself healthy. I'm not going to tell you what those things are. Just know that a lot of people are still being impacted. So I always tell you guys, love you more, love your people more. Until next time, guys, be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.